This is Small Talk Podcast with DJ Ayers on Brooklyn Radio.
This is Small Talk, and I've got one guest, two guys, Chromeo.
Yeah.
Yo, yo.
First, let's listen to your new song, and I'm going to get you to talk a little bit about it.
Cool. Oh, the grass is greener everywhere you look. So many girls out there, I could write a book. That one's ass is Lena, and this one's like Serena. But I think your silhouette is meaner. And even though you got small breasts, but to me they look the best. I confess, I wanna go home and get you undressed. You see, your problems of self-esteem could be self-fulfilling prophecies. So probably your best policy is to talk to me. Looking over your shoulder, 'cause if it was up to me, I would make you feel right. Stop looking over your shoulder, 'cause if it was up to me, I would make you feel right. I know you heard this 100 times. To me what matters is what's inside. And a little backside too. Is that bad, is that taboo? Can I get a bird's eye view? You see, your problems of self-esteem could be self-fulfilling prophecy. So arguably your best policy should be talking to me, or talking to me. Stop looking over your shoulder, 'cause if it was up to me, it's nonsense, it's not a contest. And besides, if it was a contest, you'd win it. I wanna take a bath with you in it. Bathroom sex, you with it. I did it, I might, I'll do it with you if you wanna try. I've seen you cracking a smile. Guess I have to stay for a while. Stop looking over your shoulder, 'cause if it was up to me, I would make you feel right.
So that's called Over Your Shoulder.
Yeah.
And people can get that on the internet.
For free.
And you've got a crazy ass trailer for your album with this song in the background. Did you guys ramp a car for real, like Ferris Bueller style?
Yep.
Yes.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Like a Mustang?
Camaro.
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 87 Camaro.
Camaro.
Yeah.
And you don't have whiplash, like neither of you has has a neck brace on right now.
It wasn't. I mean, we should tell the truth for.
Yeah, it was a stuntman.
It was a stuntman. You can't. It's a 5 foot jump. So
yeah.
But we had to. We did like the trick, you know, the sort of the insert on slow motion, and
there was a bit of work involved, but the actual jump was done by a stuntman,
a professional. But we had to buy the car, and because you only get one or two jumps, and then the car gets totaled after that. So
yeah,
it's very expensive.
Yeah, the car it looks like it comes down really hard.
Yeah.
So who
see the sparks? Those sparks are real.
Yeah, that was the second jump.
So whose idea was that? Like, who came up with the concept for that video and all that?
Surface to Air, yeah. Who are kind of like our de facto art directors. I shouldn't even say de facto. They are our art directors, and the reference was Ferris Bueller. Definitely.
Right.
And then I came up with the idea of having the synths dragging in the back of the car, like instead of
that was so
for the marriage,
top.
You know? And because the whole album artwork is going to be marriage themed. So I thought it was like a strong image, and we just went ahead and did it, you know? And it was entirely financed by the band. Like, you can't get you're not going to talk any record label into paying for that sort of thing. But, on this record,
teaser video where you destroy a car. You think nobody's gonna want
that? Yeah, exactly. You're just not gonna want that, you know.
This is a single.
Nope,
it's not. It's just the first song that people are hearing off the album.
Yeah,
is there gonna be a lot more like this?
What do you mean, like
smooth?
This is, I guess, the smoothest, most.
Well, there's gonna be smoothness.
The next. Yeah. No, I mean, there's other this is definitely the most like sunny California you get on this record, and the next song is totally different. It's like 140 BPMs, really manic, you know. It's completely different. But yeah, I mean, a lot of, you know, people think we have like one style, and it's true. There's this one kind of funk 80s umbrella, but within that, there's many, many different flavors. So we covered a lot of ground, I feel like.
I kind of think of your progression and like your like the way you go into different kind of 80s tentacles and
totally,
late 70s tentacles of like the way that you dig for records.
Yeah.
You know, which is that you find you get into it because of James Brown, and then you start getting into 70s
Bob
stuff.
James, and then you're doing Bob. Like, I remember like I had a whole period of just anything CTI, you know, you get all the CTI records, and then you get into like
Tap and Z, and
then you get into like the Poqueros,
Kudu,
you know,
records.
You want anything that's got the Poquero, the Toto guys playing on it, and you get into that tangent. It's just different tangents, and we're, I mean, a lot of what we do has got that kind of student, you know, approach,
but it's masterful at the same time. I'm not going to spend the whole podcast sucking your dick, by the way.
Aww.
I just want to talk Chromeo stuff from the beginning, because I think people are going to click on this for Chromeo, not for DJ Ayers. So I'm going to give people a little bit of Chromeo before we start talking about Larry
before
David.
It's like, before it's like, back to me.
Okay, we're going to listen to another.
Yo, shout out to all my trap niggas. Shout out to my nigga Bo. I see you on the side. Trapping out the house with the boys on the wonders. Trapping out the house with the boys on the wonders. Trapping out the house with the boys on the wonders. Trapped out the bando. 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 Trapping out the house with the boys on the wonders. Trapping out the house with the boys on the wonders. Trapped out the bando. Got two like Rambo. Got bird like Birdman. Got white like Lindsay Lohan. Made a 100 set all the pots and pans. On the corner serving grounds. My nigga be on the block hard. My nigga be serving that hard. Got bricks like Shaq at the free throw. You can call my phone. Got no prices for the LO. Don't knock at my door. I don't wanna talk to you. Got them bricks for the LO. I will serve you. In the bando. Board it up. Got them bricks in the wall and in the flow. piece of real way I'm playing with the dough. If the fan wanna talk, I just tell them I don't know.
Fuck 12.
Trapping at the house with the boys on the wonders. Trapping at the house with the boys on the wonders.
Bando.
Trapping at the house with the boys on the wonders.
Whoa.
Tried out the bando. 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 Trapping at the house with the boys on the wonders. Trapping at the house with the boys on the wonders. Trapping in the vacant.
Trapping.
Serving all my patients.
Trapping.
Get it from the Haitian. Smoking loud, my eye look Asian.
That's Migos. You fuck with this hard, right?
I like it, yeah. I think it's a really cool mixtape.
It makes me feel old, though.
Yeah. Yeah, but at the same time, like, we used to listen to Hot Boys a lot when that came out. And this is kind of, it's like a newer iteration of that. I mean, obviously, Manny Fresh's production back in the day was way more deft than this stuff. Like, Manny Fresh was really doing like some Mantronics, post-Mantronics maneuvers there.
Yeah.
But lyrically, it's very much, it makes me, brings me back to the Hot Boys vibes.
Yeah.
You know? And we were really into that when I came out. Really into Hot Boys.
Yeah, and you had a scratch label. P, you did all the artwork for the label, and
all
it was
the break
all
beats. Yeah.
Pen
yeah.
and pixel.
Yes,
art.
We fetishized that stuff.
Yeah,
8-track on the cover, no shirt on.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
crazy fucking helicopters.
Well, that
like,
was it. Was a remake of a Lil Wayne record.
Yeah,
it's The Block Is
the
Hot.
The Block Is Hot. Yeah, yeah.
And we
spent many hours looking at his underwear and making it a Canadian flag.
It was amazing. We really fetishized. I mean, I'll never forget like. When we used to buy The Source every month and just be like, what's the next crazy cover going to be? Is it going
to
be
actually
like...
I actually sent my CV to Pen and Pixel back then.
Yeah.
Did you really?
I sent all the record covers to Pen and Pixel.
Oh my
just
God.
Trying to get put on?
Yeah. Bro, like, come on.
We couldn't believe...
How old were you then when you were doing those covers?
We were like 22. We're
22,
22 yeah.
yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
We're wilding, man. We love that
clever stuff. Craze, Infamous, 8-track, all those
there was covers. Another one where we did like the Monkey Boys and we remade Baby's album where he's like half man, half bird, and Alain was
8-track
like
was half
monkey,
monkey half
with the monobrow. It was we were having so much fun with that
with one glass eye. It was
were you in college then? Had you finished college?
It was right after college. It was during the end of college. You had finished college already.
And where did you guys both go to college?
In Montreal.
In Montreal, yeah.
McGill? Or?
I went to McGill and he went to business school over there.
You went to business school?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And then you finished in... soon you
I finished,
started a rock band.
Yeah. Well, out of business school, I went to do accounting for records for record and
the record
music
store. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Like a synth shop.
Mm-hmm.
And right when we were starting to do stuff with Chromeo and... And when we got really busy,
What was your ambition for Chromeo when you first started it? Did you have any plan for it at all?
No, we thought it was going to be a side project.
Yeah.
You know, we had
to the hip hop stuff?
Yeah. And then, I mean, that's early days, like when Tiga first offered us a record deal. We thought it was going to be a side project. And then we both got so passionate and involved that like by the time Needy Girl was done, I had pretty much, given up on the idea of doing hip hop, and we just wanted to do that, and you know we were gonna kind of build it slowly.
Why did you give up on hip hop?
That's the time where Tritons were just coming out, and I was making beats on the 950, and I remember like for one at one period in time, you had Swizz on the Triton. But you still had like the sort of DJ Spinners and the Diamond D's doing, you know, kind of SP12, S950 beats. But I remember the moment for me where it clicked was when the Blueprint came out and they were doing like soul beats, sample based productions with keyboards and embellished by keyboards, basically just Blaze kind of stuff. And I was like, man, that's just too, I remember, P, do you remember I was like going to ask you if I should buy a Triton at one point?
Yeah.
I was like, should I try to do that? And it was too advanced, you know? Like I remember hearing, that thing.
Music high.
I was like, they're not playing fair. Like you can fit in more sample and you can play all this keyboard stuff and it sounds good. I was like, I'd rather just go somewhere else.
If you're about to pull the instruments out, you'd rather do like funk or
yeah, exactly. Like that was the rationale.
Because to us, hip hop was
sampling.
That one sound was sampling.
We just like chopping records. Like if you're gonna, like P said, if you're gonna write and your own stuff, might as well do songs and like.
It was about like struggling to make a sample fit. It was, you know, it was a whole other thing.
Which some people still do amazingly, and it's all, I mean, it's just cool, but I'm happy we did other stuff, you know? For me, it was like the blueprint. I was like, okay, this is too advanced. Like, yeah.
And it was a bit like hybrid, you know? It was like a little bit of the sample, make it sound good, a little bit of this, put a live bass line. And it was
live bass. But it was the beginning of what rap production became today. And it was just like a paradigm shift because I just liked the DITC, Showbiz and AG, just a loop basically and some drums.
Yeah. Let's listen to some rap with a loop.
Yeah. Ah, nice.
Sick rhyme, call C. Yeah, we heavy on the wrist. All right now, pay attention to the crime rhyme Houdini P.
Keeping you niggas in perspective.
Mom,
representative.
Call me the specialist, professional, professor at this rap science up in the laboratory. That's why you small rhyme for me. Storeboard rap ain't shit, my category is that of an insane man who strike back. I draw first blood, it's over with, and that's that. You wanna square off the scene, slice that cat.
Furious head nodding going on right now.
Oh my god. My smile, like.
Well, I am that, which bring apocalypse to this game
called rap.
Not a game, but quite serious, and yo,
in fact,
you'll be running for dear life, so far you might fall off
the map.
Fuck with P, you need to get. At least you had an opportunity.
I know the whole shit by heart.
Fresh out the motherfucking pack of Red World Premier.
The East Coast of Canada was definitely fucking with like Queens rap.
So heavy, my god.
Do you remember Frankenstein's Pain?
Of course, no, yeah, yeah. The pain, the rain is gone.
Yeah, yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah.
That was yeah. Dope. Yeah.
That was on some like Japanese, like we're gonna do rockabilly better than the rockabilly dudes do rockabilly. Like Frankenstein was like more Mobb Deep than Mobb Deep was.
But you know he was a white guy.
Yeah, of
Italian
course.
Guy.
Yeah, it's so strange.
Incredible. I remember we brought him to Montreal. Do you remember that, Pete? He came to Montreal. He had gel in his hair. He was wearing a sweatsuit. Total Goomba.
He looked like a young,
is he from
a young hockey
yeah,
coach.
Yeah, Toronto guy. So we brought him to Montreal for a show. Friends of us brought him, and we waited for him like fans. And out comes this Italian.
Oh, you didn't know.
We didn't know. We couldn't believe it because he doesn't sound white.
I don't remember him ever coming to New York.
Never.
I don't think he ever came to New York.
Never, never. His career was like, you know, it was very short, but.
Yeah.
We love East Coast and Queens.
Never second guess a cat who hold gat. Conceal, but easily reveal the vast. Body casting raps to get your back snapped in half a seven. Possible pain beyond measure. Sights he living brought him to his last prayer. Life changed around quick to one sit. Face full of fear, conquering your ice grill. Drowsiness, putting to sleep like night grill. Giving an overdose of this rap potent. Potentially dangerous, fatally left.
They really got to where they could do anything they wanted to.
Anything. Remember like Havoc used to loop like 3 seconds off of a record. Like anything, pretty much any kind of noise. And like basically put drums and Cormega and it was great.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's amazing.
Yeah,
amazing.
when the Shook Ones Part 2 sample got outed.
I still am skeptical about that. Are you sure that's what it is and everything?
Me personally, I'm not 100%
sure. I'm not 100%
sure. But it fucking, I mean, it's a testament to that dude's wizardry that shit is made out of records at all. That's such a crazy sounding beat. And
well,
the fact
yeah.
That, like,
but there's pitch stuff going, right?
Yeah, crazy pitch shit going on. And like, so slow that it doesn't even get to where the percussion would start in
right.
The sample or whatever. Like, it's just, it's... pitch down to where these things are just noises like notes.
Well, yeah, one thing that sounds really good is pitch down record crackle. Like if you have static on the record and you pitch it down and it becomes really, it's amazing. It's amazing. It's like the XX.
Burial.
You like, yeah, totally. It's all the same. But yeah, this is the pinnacle. And P-Thug got his name from actually the remix to that song. Yeah. Nigga P-Thugly. And the remix sampled like a Slick Rick record. We were really nerding out, but like this is...
Oh, but that's the best shit.
That's the best shit, yeah. Like, I don't know who's going to listen to this and get what we're talking about, but... Cosmo.
Shout out to Cosmo Baker. So you guys are Canadians. So what is Drake like in real life?
Like now or back then?
It was a joke, but if you've come across him.
Yeah, we can. I told you, like, I met him we met him a couple of times, actually. Yeah. He's a big Chromeo fan. He knew Mama's Boy by heart. He's a really, really cool guy. And what I was telling you before is that you can make fun of his sweaters to his face and he'll laugh because he's in on the joke because, you know, like you said, he's got this Canadian self-awareness, you know? It's amazing. I mean, to me, the fact that, you know, one of the greatest rappers in the world is Canadian was as unfathomable as when we were in high school. And if you would have told me the greatest rapper in the world is going to be white, like to me, that was, you know, never.
No. Yeah, of course.
I mean, the closest you could maybe get was MC Search, maybe, you know, when we were kids.
Yeah. Which is great. But just a far cry from like any sort of cultural domination like Eminem
is. And but to us, the fact like a Canadian, you know, to us, I mean, Cardinal was, you know, because he was sort of down with guys down
sort
here,
of
right?
But never to that extent.
But I'm saying like he was the furthest you could go for a Canadian. Like Cardinal was just like, whoa, that guy's, he's in New York all year, like whoa. You know, and then to have like Drake being like one of the greatest artists. I have a really funny anecdote. Speaking of stuff that like when we were kids, you could think is unfathomable. I was making beats for this one rapper and he said, one day rappers are going to sing and rap. The same guy is going to sing and rap. And to me, that's like, if you told me that, you know, one day, dogs are going to vote. I'd just be like, what? Like you can't conceive it. You know, he was like, one day rappers will sing, the same guy will sing and rap. I was like, what, like Nas, you know, like love, calm down. Like, you know, when Nas did that,
yeah,
that was the only thing I accepted. But look what happened.
Yeah. And that speaks to like coming of age in the 90s too, because in the 80s, like the early 80s, especially like sing songy kind of rapping, it wasn't a thing. It all kind of got ended. Well, you know, it brings us to another song.
Mauna. It was a clear black night. Ooh. A clear white moon. Warren G was on the streets trying to consume some skirts for the E so I could get some phones rolling in my ride, chilling all alone.
Just hit the east side of the LBC.
I remember when this came out and I had the cassette and I thought this was one of the first songs that like you couldn't stop playing. You just couldn't stop playing. You just rewind it.
I got five on it was like that too.
Yeah. That never really made it to Canada, to be fair. We liked it, but this was
these hookers looking so hard, they straight hit the curve. Want to bigger, better things than some horny tricks. I see my homie and some suckers all in his mix.
Listen to Nate Dogg's vocals, how tight they are. Listen to how tight they are. They sound like they were aligned in Pro Tools.
Yeah.
Listen.
And they all around. Ain't none of them seeing if they going straight down for power.
Like, this is probably recorded on 2-inch tape, you know what I mean?
Or ADAT.
ADAT.
I think I'm going down. I can't believe it's happening in my own town. If I had wings, I would fly. Let me contemplate. I glance in the cut and I see my homie Nate. 16 in the clip and 1 in the hole. Nate Dogg is about to make some.
So they replayed everything, right? Like, I mean, when we were kids, we thought for a second they would sample it, but they really replayed everything.
Yeah, with a bad clavinet sound.
But that's probably a real synth doing the beow. It's amazing. Amazing.
And then one more, and then we're going to
808 cymbal, right?
Yeah.
808, I mean, it's so cool how it's like Michael McDonald with 808. So
you can check sounds from this is crazy to me.
Crazy. I'm a nigga from the motherfucking streets.
I was a huge West Coast fan back then. Huge.
You know we met Nate Dogg, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's
remember
right.
That?
There's recall that? Yeah.
There's a track that exists somewhere on somebody's hard drive of Chromeo and Nate Dogg.
Well, My Girl's Calling Me a Liar.
Yeah.
And he sang on it.
And you had to take him off.
His manager wanted, I remember that. His manager was like,
$30,000 he wanted.
No, dude. $100,000, but he was going to give it to us for $70,000. And he said, because it ain't a hit unless Nate spit. Oh, man. Rest in peace. So cool.
That had to hurt, though. To have like a cool experience with somebody and then not so fast.
We were just so puzzled by the music business at that time.
He did, I mean, the experience was rather short. He recorded the track without us, so we just went to his place and
listened to it.
It
was like 10 bars.
It was over.
It was like 10 bars. It was like a hook and half
and it
verse.
Was over. But it's somewhere on somebody's hard drive.
There's Pro Tools session.
8 tracks of his voice stacked.
Right.
I remember.
And it sounds so
session.
Clean.
Yeah, it sounded cool. I mean, he's, man.
Okay.
Definitely feeling old with all these questions, but it's good. Good vibes.
What does Touche et Lelepou mean?
Quoi?
From the De La Soul skit.
Yeah, that doesn't mean anything. We were really into Balloony Mind State, the following record.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was cool.
It was weird because there was a whole song where just Maceo Parker like playing over a loop.
Yeah.
Like that, I think that fucked a lot of people's heads up. Because it was almost like a challenge, like, oh yeah, you like jazz? Here's some fucking asshole.
We thought it was an acid jazz record.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
What's the one with a Japanese rapper?
That's it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. What song was it?
It was an interlude on Balloony Mind State.
Oh, yeah. Dig your bond in a shitting groove. Meko ni meku.
It was good. That album was cool.
The Gangnam Style
of the 90s. Yeah.
3, whenever that came out.
93, yeah.
There's albums that come out that you like love them the first time that you hear them, and then there's De La Soul albums, the first whatever 4, maybe all of their albums, where you listen to it and you're just puzzled. You're like, wait a minute, what? Is this the same group that did the last album? And
yeah,
like,
true.
Where are they? Because you're used to either people falling off, like Souls of Mischief or Black Sheep or whatever.
Yeah. They had a good run.
Or like somebody staying pretty consistent and improving on it. But like De La Soul totally changed their shit up a bunch of times.
Yeah, Stakes Is High, I think, was the high point. You know, I remember.
It's hard though, dude. They're all
dude,
so
even,
good.
No, like, but I mean, of course,
even the
stuff,
Me, Myself, and I.
Well, no, obviously, but
when I was a kid, that was like the.
But that's like.
I mean, that's why
that's
we
like
knew
Jimi Hendrix,
Hall & Oates,
right?
That's when you first time you heard Hall & Oates, you're like, wait, that's the De La Soul sample.
Yeah, of course. I mean,
that's how I discovered Parliament. It was
me too
through De La Soul.
Yeah, not just
me myself and I.
Yeah, because our parents didn't exactly listen to Parliament records, so we listened to the Warren G and De La and Dre and all that, and then we were like, oh man, that's the original, and then we started listening to those records.
It took me a while to consider Knee Deep as like a Parliament record and not the De La sample.
Yeah, and it is a pretty weird record because it's not like a slow, like funky slop kind of, you know, it's not like Let Me Ride, Sweet Chariot, you know, kind of vibe at all. It's a disco record. So it's a little bit like,
and it's got change ups too.
Yeah.
Which is rare for that kind of, because they were pretty much one riff.
Yeah, yeah. They would groove for a long time and he would talk his shit.
Yeah.
And then they would do something crazy at the end.
Yeah. That's amazing stuff.
Okay. This is a weird record that I found that I don't know that much about, but I bet you do and you can tell me about it.
Okay. I never heard this. Say goodbye. Say goodbye. Lady, lady. French? Is he? See, he's got an accent. What's happening?
It's Marvin Gaye.
Whoa.
Marvin Gaye recorded this 2 years before he died, and the original name of the song was Sanctified Pussy. But then after he died, his brother-in-law finished it. It was a demo. And so this is like, for some reason, cited as a early boogie record.
Yeah.
Because it's 82 and, you know, it has the drum sounds and it has the vocoder and all that shit.
But it's, like, it's an 808
thing. A lot of that stuff was added to it later.
Oh, sure. The drums are like sexual healing style, but then you've got all this move. I thought he had a weird accent when he came in. I was like, what is that, a weird French trying to sing an English kind of record?
Right, you thought I was trying to throw you a curveball.
Yeah, I don't know this. I never heard this record. Is it out now? Can you buy it?
Yeah, it's okay. It's on the album that came out in 84. It came out in 84. And so they, like, his brother-in-law, who was his guitar player.
Who killed who? That was him and his dad, right?
Yeah, his dad shot him.
Yeah, okay. I feel like Dilla could have touched that.
If you were killed in a plane crash or something, you're bringing up Dilla, like, made me think about it. Would you want people to fuck with your music after you died?
Yeah. It's hard, right? Because, like, you've got the typical of example of Kafka, who died, and then he was like, don't publish any of my shit, it's trash, you know? And then, so I think it's a morbid thought, but I think
you've got all the post Tupac and Biggie songs.
I mean, yeah, great Tupac songs, right? That came out after. I mean, some weren't great.
Maybe,
but
not the hologram. I wouldn't want myself holograms, but.
But Do for Love, that's in the Tupac canon, and that came out after his death. I think
you got to put that in your will. No holograms.
No holograms. No holograms. Yeah, I think you hope that people have the good taste and the common sense to take what you did and shape it and rework it for posterity. But yeah,
the
you don't
want to
deprive people. Yeah.
Well, Dilla let a lot of stuff come out that was maybe subpar compared to the beats that he was selling to rappers.
But by the way, I mean, with all due respect, like Dilla, you know, but even when he was alive, I don't know if you remember the weird records on Groove Attack. Like, they were kind of throwaways. You could tell he was just giving them to Groove Attack.
He was selling his stuff that he didn't want to
throwaways,
put out.
Yeah.
On Stone's Throw.
And I mean, this was before Stone's Throw.
Yeah.
And even, I mean, for me, I have... This is, like, weird to say, but, like, I have trouble listening to Donuts because, contrary to, it's not a posthumous record, but you can tell it's a record made by someone who's so debilitated. Like, it's, you know, he made that record on a hospital bed. And so it's like, it's a record that's from someone who's ill. And I mean, yeah, it's genius and all that, but I have trouble listening to it because you can hear that it's precarious. You know, it's made in this, like, weird transition state. I don't know any other records that were made by someone on a hospital bed. That was like, that record's weird, you know? And there's all these people that find hidden messages in there.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah, because there's some of the samples he uses have, like, lyrics that you interpret, you know?
Oh, okay. Oh, right, yeah. Fuck.
But yeah, definitely greatest beat maker, most inspired beat maker ever. And he Runnin' by Far Side is what really inspired me to start making rap beats.
Yeah, boy, that's a good one. And it's good to bring that up too, because, like, there's so many people who got into Dilla with Donuts, and because there was such a, like, such a big noise around him with can him I say dying something? And all that, the story.
To me, people who got, and it, this is no disrespect, because whenever you get into something, it's like some old heads could chastise us for getting into Funkadelic when De La Soul came out, or Snoop. Like, so no one's more authentic than someone else. No one's here measuring your authenticity of how you enjoy music. But I find there's a parallel between the people who discovered Dilla with Donuts and the people who became R. Kelly heads after Trapped in the Closet.
Exactly, yeah.
Right? You have this other period, but whatever, right? Like, you know...
Yeah, instead of like a woman's threat or you remind me of my Jeep.
Or when a woman's fed up. Well, that's the same one,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
The,
fuck.
That's the best shit ever.
Yeah, unreal.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Big R. Kelly fans over here.
Yeah. Yeah, all of us.
Oh, nice.
This is you playing at Daryl Hall's house.
Definitely a career high point for us.
So, did you rehearse this a bunch?
Yes.
How long did you spend on this whole thing?
2 days. 1 day of rehearsals and 1 day of recording.
We were talking a little bit about it off mic, but it must be strange when you have a picture in your head of somebody who is like your hero from how he was in 1983 or 1984.
Yeah.
And then you know, when you actually get to meet him.
It's him from 1994.
Oh, you think he hasn't moved past the
90s? No. I mean, this is the thing with Daryl, right? Is that like...
I like that you're on a first name basis with him.
Oh, we are.
We are.
We email. The thing with him is that like... Of course, yeah, we went there. P brought the prophet. You know, we brought the synths. We thought he was going to geek out, you know, and I think he really couldn't be bothered. He was, what, yeah. You got a world, sir? They still make those? You know, he has a triton.
He barely remembered, like, the name of the synths that, you know.
That they used to make the entire albums.
I was, like, ready with all the original sounds. I remade all the patches, and I was, like, ready to go, man, look. Prophet 5, great condition, you know? And he's like, oh yeah, these things. Oh, I remember that.
As if I brought you a Sony Walkman.
Yeah, and exactly. Like, yeah. Like, ha ha ha.
But he's awesome. And the new Daryl, the now Daryl, is incredible. And this, like, he's so funny. And
is he paternal at all?
No.
You didn't get that vibe?
No.
He's a dude.
Yeah. Now he's a rugged alpha male, you know, like not paternal, yeah. Yeah, tough guy.
Are they they're the dudes that got started like singing on the streets in Philly,
yes,
right? Like
very, singing, yeah. Absolutely.
Doo-wop on the streets, yep. In Philly, and yeah. Like
mentored by Smokey and all that.
In the 60s?
Yeah. He's old, man. There's a great Pitchfork interview about him where he talks about, you know, he was like, a great thing changed in music after the civil rights, and you're like, okay, dude, like your memory goes way back, like you've lived through.
Yeah, because when he started out, they were doing quote unquote race music. It's so fucked to think about it that way.
Yeah, but
because we make fun of like Sweden when they have the black music section, but yeah, it was like that here.
But it was like that in the '80s, when there was still black radio. That stayed. Black radio stayed until the 80s, the late 80s.
And now, like, if you look at the word urban, it's a little bit not PC anymore. But
nor should it be. It's
when we were coming up.
That was the word.
Urban. What kind of DJ are you?
Like, yeah.
Urban format.
Yeah. It's racist.
Just code words.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I watched...
That's ratchet now.
Yeah.
You can't say somebody's ghetto, but you can say that they're ratchet.
That's so funny. Nick Catchdubs came up with ratchet. That's like the Tarjay, you know?
Yeah.
It's like ratchet chic.
Still, it must have been a fucking trip.
It was unbelievable. We stayed up the whole night, the night before, just watching YouTubes, old Hall & Oates YouTubes. We stayed up. It was when I still live uptown. And we were like, the whole apartment was a fourth of the size of this living room. And we were just, pee was on the inflatable.
Started from the bottom.
Yes. No, you just say started. And
I was on the inflatable.
Pee was on the inflatable. And we were just looking at YouTubes all night. And, you know, and this was the guy we were going to go meet the next day in Connecticut. But we are on a first name with him, and he's a cool dude. He's amazing. And I mean, talk about a guy who sort of became like a rebirth, right? A renaissance. Like, I hope other guys get that.
Have there been anybody who've been sort of your idols who you've met and you've been disappointed with?
Well, the Prophet 5 experience was
just as far as geeking out goes, I was pretty disappointed.
But you don't want to meet your idols, you know? Yeah, ideally, you kind of don't want to meet anyone because you're always going to be... I mean, first of all, I think that, you know...
Tawatha was...
Yeah, but it's not like, I mean, I'm sure if we met Prince, it would be some kind of a disappointment.
Well, everybody knows.
But I mean,
well, that's another one though, where 2013 Prince and 1983 Prince would cross the street if they saw each other.
But that's like, it's like that for everybody. I mean, I just feel like in music, you actually have the luxury of perhaps maybe overlapping with your idols, but in literature, it's not like... Like, yo, what if you meet Shakespeare? Oh my God. Like, you know what I mean? It's not going to happen. Or, you know, I just feel like we again, you know, this is a cliche, but you like their work and it doesn't mean you like them. Or you can have any kind of, I mean, you know, what we like is a construct. You know, you like these people that are frozen in time and in your record collection and in your iTunes. Who knows how they are now? You know, and I think what we touch upon too is, I mean, P and I talked about it a lot, is we come from the standpoint that, like, basically music peaked with, you know, Fleetwood Mac, Rumors, Hotel California, and Beat It, essentially. And that, like, drums will never sound as good. And, you know, like, records will never sound. But those guys, that was just one phase in their career. Like, they moved on, and the 80s were better than that for them, and then the 90s in their minds were better, and now they've got a motif, and they think they're doing stuff that sounds better, you know? Yeah. we're the conservative ones.
And those keyboards don't break down all the time. You don't have to take them into the shop.
Yeah. You can actually buy a new one, and, like, you know.
You can rent a new one.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, yeah.
You don't need a tech for it.
Are you familiar with Fuck, Marry, Kill? The game Fuck, Marry, Kill? So it's the way it works is if I tell you three girls.
Yes.
And you say, I'd fuck this one, I'd marry that one, I'd kill that one.
Yeah. Okay.
So I've got some Fuck, Marry, Kills.
Okay.
For you. Yamaha CS80, Oberheim OBXA, Juno 106. Fuck, Marry, Kill.
Oh, you got to okay. You got to kill one of them?
You've got to kill one.
Yeah, I'll let pee.
I'd kill the OBXA. Mm-hmm. I've had one and it doesn't sound that good. The OBX is way better.
Okay. Who are you fucking and who are you marrying?
I would marry the Juno 106. Mm-hmm. And I would totally fuck the CS80.
Wow.
303-808-909.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Ooh, fuck them all.
No, I would. I would kill the 303.
And which one are you gonna marry, and which one are you gonna fuck?
I would fuck the 909.
Right.
Marry the 808.
Yeah, that's kind of an easy one.
Yeah, easy.
Lindrum, Simmons Fairlight.
Wow. Oh,
Jesus Christ. Okay, I'd fuck the Fairlight.
It's so serious. Okay, go on, go on.
What was it? Fairlight?
Lindrum. And
fuck the Fairlight, marry the Lindrum.
Kill the Simmons.
And kill the Simmons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
MPC.
Yeah.
Okay. SP-1200.
I'll take this, please.
S-950.
This is for me. This is for me, all right? That's perfect. Okay, okay. And, oh, my God, that's so hard. That's the hardest one, by the way. So, kill the MPC, marry the SP-12, and fuck the 950.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, he looks like he disagrees.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, because he knows I did everything on the 950. By the way, the Needy Girl drums are on the 950.
Personally, I would marry the 950 and fuck the SP-12.
SP-12.
Yeah.
I remember back in the day when I was writing for Vice, I did an interview with Necro. And I was like, so you make beats on an N-Sonic? And he was like, yes, not an SP. And he said, I will pee on your SP.
Sounds like Necro.
Man, I had them come up and play the college where I went to school. The High and Mighty and Necro, their nice. Group together.
That was Cage.
Oh, yeah, you're right. That was Cage.
Mm-hmm.
How can I mix up Cage and Necro?
I don't know. You might want to delete that part of the podcast because you'll get death threats from some trolls.
He will call you.
Yeah, it's so weird that still exists, and like Necro is still Necro, and Cage is something just completely different.
Cage
is like lost a ton of weight and like got off drugs, and Necro is still just like making Kill Your Babysitter movies and just like.
Yeah.
Smoking dust or whatever it is that he does. Fuck Kill Mary, vocoder talkbox autotune.
Easy.
Mary talkbox, fuck vocoder,
and death to autotune.
Yeah.
Jordan 1, Jordan 3, Jordan 4.
Easy. Kill the Jordan 1. Marry the Jordan 4, fuck the Jordan 3.
Dave, same answer?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just
no. He would marry the Jordan 3 and fuck the Jordan 4.
There you go. Thank you, Pete.
Yeah.
Winnipeg, Edmonton, Saskatoon.
Amazing, jeez. Amazing. Okay. Well, I'll tell you right now. Kill Edmonton. Marry Saskatoon and fuck Winnipeg. Saskatoon would be like the country girl, the pretty country girl, right?
Yeah.
We're not big Alberta fans, right? So the closer you get to Alberta, I mean, because it's not that we love people in Alberta, but it's the Texas of Canada. It's a very conservative and right-wing kind of place.
Yeah.
Anyways, that was very funny. And shouts to our boys over there in Calgary.
Small town DJs.
The small town guys.
Yeah, don't mix up Calgary with,
very
with
different.
Edmonton. Edmonton very people different. Go to Calgary on the weekends to get some flavor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Edmonton. No, Calgary is totally different.
Saskatoon is pretty soulful.
That's why I married her.
Yeah.
Toontown.
Yeah, Toon. Shout out to everybody in Toon.
Tune in.
Biggie, J, Nas. Fuck, kill, marry.
Okay. Kill J. Fuck Nas, marry Biggie. You're a widow, so then you can remarry Drake. I'm sure he wouldn't say no.
How dare you? All right, here I'm going to play a clip here.
Rap. No? What the hell is this?
It doesn't matter what time your appointment is for, anybody who comes in ahead of you gets your spot.
Yes.
That's how they do it here.
LD.
I'm telling you. What?
King
what do you have to
kings.
Say? Nothing?
Hold on, which one is this?
Can't talk? People at doctor's offices can't talk? Is that a rule or something? Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry to bother you, but, you know, I did a nice thing for you. I held the elevator for you so you can get on first.
Right.
And thanks. Then I was a gentleman and I let you out.
Right.
Okay? And you came down the hall. You wouldn't let me get by you. You knew I was...
I wouldn't
let me get by me. And then you signed in ahead of me.
Well, before you. Of course I signed in
ahead. Yeah, but my appointment was for 11:30. Yours was for 11:45. Okay. Yeah. What were you doing in there anyway for 40 minutes?
He's laughing.
What was going on in there? What were you chatting? Talking about old times? What was that? Huh? You know, it's not right. You're in a doctor's office. Don't chit-chat. Don't ask him how his day was. You don't chit-chat. You let him examine you, you go out.
Mr. Dov? Lurry Dov?
That's Larry David.
Lurry Dov.
Mr. David, the doctor will see you now.
Oh, wow. That's very special, isn't it? Thank you.
Thank you for your patience.
Yes, it's been quite a nice time.
Do you feel that? Do you feel that when you run your errands? Like that kind of just...
Every minute, every
falling
day.
Down rage?
Yeah. Every day. Every lineup, every time there's something being sampled, every time you're at the doctor's, all the time.
It's unreal. Like, to tap into that. I feel like there's definitely a lineage from him up to Louis C.K.,
yeah, we're not very familiar with Louis C.K., but a lot of people maybe Louis C.K. is like a Gentile Larry David. Mm-hmm. I don't know him well. Yeah. I don't know Louis C.K. well.
But you identify with Larry David deeply
to the death, of course. Larry David funk, man. That's us. If our album wasn't the working title of our album. Was if it wasn't going to be called White Women, it was going to be Diary of a Schmuck.
That's a harder sell.
Yeah. White Women isn't easy, by the way.
It's great, though. That's I texted you back when you told me what it was. It's Small Town Pete's, one of his favorites, is that he has a white women fetish.
It's not a lot of choice out there.
Oh, in Alberta, you mean?
Yeah.
You want to hear some more rap music?
Yeah, or Curb. It's actually, you could hear Curb on radio or like just as audio and it would still be funny.
Yeah.
But I can hear them laugh more.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Because all the extras are stand-up comedians. They're all from like the LA stand-up scene. You know, like the random passerbys that he just offends. You can hear them. They're grinning. They just can't believe they got it. It's cool. Yeah, rap. Let's do it. What do we got?
Now, you know what? Actually, I want to play my favorite Chromeo song.
Ah, nice. Album one, Woman Friend. It has to be something like that, no?
And Dave, no offense.
Go ahead. Oh, yeah.
Why would there be no offense?
Because you're not singing on it.
Yeah, I am singing.
You are?
Oh.
All this time, I thought this was like the Martin Gore Depeche Mode track.
No.
I don't wanna be with anybody at all.
I always thought that was P.
Vocorder.
I don't wanna be seen with anybody.
That's that was.
I
the
think
first
I also hear a Canadian accent.
Yeah, and it's the first song. It's the first song we wrote as Chromeo.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I loved it. It captures that like kind
electro clash, right?
No. Well, I was gonna say like that. Like 80s earnestness and like naivety, it like makes me feel like a teenager when I listen to it. Like it's so literal, like it's so good.
Dude, we've played that song so many times.
Oh wow.
You mean live?
Yeah, in the early days.
What was did you ever have any moments when you
Can I tell you what the influence is?
Please, yeah.
The song? You remember Joe?
Yeah.
I wanna know what turns you on.
Oh, shit. God damn it. Now I'm gonna have that. I wish you didn't tell me.
No, it's funnier, right?
Yeah, it's great.
Uh-huh.
People sleep on Joe.
Joe's great.
Joe had his hands in a lot of shit.
Yep, including big puns. Do you think that's a crime? I don't wanna be with anybody at all. This I haven't heard this in years.
Really?
Yeah. I don't want to be seen with anybody. Live P would sing it, but on the record it's me.
That's why, yeah.
It was our electro clash song. So cool.
When you came out, and I think the first place most people heard, the first label most people associated with you with was Vice.
Yeah.
And a lot of people thought that it was like a cheeky
yep.
thing. Is that? I wonder, like, did you get a lot of press where people would ask you questions and think that it was a joke?
Yeah, of course. The first album, yeah, of course. That's almost all it was.
That was all the interviews on the first record.
Yeah.
They like thought it was Weird Al Yankovic. Like,
yeah.
Funny
yeah. Or Tenacious D or something like that.
Oh, right, yeah. I mean, or Flight of the Conchords, right?
Yeah,
or yeah, they weren't around
yet. The hair metal band?
The Darkness.
The Darkness.
Yeah.
Very much.
Oh, that was a compliment when they yeah, would say, was, you guys yeah. are like the Darkness of...
Funk, yeah.
Of funk. We were like, yes, cool, yeah, we'll take that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think.
I mean, by the way, if you look at P and I don't blame them. You know.
right.
But I remember us being really bummed at how misunderstood we felt after the first album, yeah. and we were just like, let's look at the White Stripes, though. Like, you know, it took them 5 records, and because Seven Nation Army had just come out.
Yeah, because they're still referencing heavily, but they're being taken seriously.
Yeah, and we were just like, if we keep doing it, you know, it's going to be like the White Stripes. And so that's why we kept going.
What I was going to ask you is that did you ever do anything, do you remember doing anything when you were first starting to tour, like super green?
That, super what?
Super green. Like shit that you would know now is like a complete no-no.
On tour?
Like on stage.
Yeah, like
in the studio,
everything,
whatever.
Everything, I mean, well, this whole...
It's weird how nobody teaches you this shit.
Yeah,
like you
dude.
Just get out there and you have to figure out what you're doing.
We didn't know what a tour manager was. We didn't know, I mean, we didn't know anything.
We don't know what anything was. we did everything ourselves.
We had no idea. We were just lost. And I mean, in a way, it's like, it sucks because we came out, like that first album came out before the internet, you know, kind of. So it took a long time to spread, you know.
In terms of like finding research and all that, or are you talking about?
No, like, in terms people? Of like finding people discovering us.
Oh, to listen.
But then,
yeah.
But then, luckily, the second album came out right when MySpace and blogs were blown up. So then that was cool. I remember like right when MySpace started, like people were still listening to Needy Girl. So that was great.
I listened to the whole albums and like have been friends with you guys basically since you've been doing this. So I don't experience it the way that, like, I don't know what your hits are. But I know all the songs because I listened to all the albums. What was your first hit?
Needy Girl.
Right. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Needy Girl was definitely the first one.
And do you remember a moment where you were like, oh shit, like this is a lot bigger than we thought it was going to
be? Yep, absolutely. When I came back from France, the Fancy Footwork record had just come out. And
yeah, that was a big one.
But and we did this show with at Studio B with Flastrodamus and before we left New York to go to Paris. So like in August of 2006, we did a show at Cake Shop, and we thought this was our biggest play to date, and there was probably like, you know, a couple hundred people. And then we came back and we played at Studio B, and they were like, you know, 1500 people, and we were like, okay, you know, something's happening, and that's kind of when it started for us.
And the first time we headlined the Bowery Ballroom too.
Oh my god, that was huge. That's the greatest feeling on earth for us. Yeah, Bowery Ballroom, because we opened for Scissor Sisters, Block Party, the streets. I mean, all the sound guys knew us. Like, oh, you guys again? You know what I mean? We were opening for everybody.
Right, yeah.
And then
yeah.
we did our own Bowery Ballrooms.
Yeah, because before that it was like Knitting Factory.
Oh, yeah.
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 And that that room was 400, 500 people, something like that. It wasn't even that big. Mm. I remember one of the greenest things that I've ever done is I was on tour with a bigger DJ and playing with a band, and the band played before us, and finished, and I looked around and said, are they done? I think they're done. And went on and started my set, and everybody was staring at me. And like the other guys I was DJing with, like, didn't come onto the stage.
It was their encore?
And I had cut into their encore.
Oh.
In Los Angeles, and it was you.
It was us. Yeah. I remember that. That was with A-Track. Yeah.
I still think about that. Yeah. And just...
I knew you. I saw that coming. Yeah.
I forgot it was you. I remember the event.
At the El Rey.
I forgot it was you. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was huge. And I mean, that's a big room. And people just started streaming out.
Yeah.
And because A-Track didn't come on with me, people didn't know what it was because nobody knew us out there. They didn't know the rub out there. And I didn't know till later. Nobody even told me what happened.
I remember that, but I don't know.
You guys are too polite.
Canadians. But I just remember going out in the room and dancing with random girls that I had met on MySpace. I mean, we were having a blast, man. That was amazing. You never live through that twice. Like, it's never, there's that one time, that first come up you have. I mean, maybe Josh and Kurt, because they really had two come ups now.
Flostradamus.
Yeah. Like, now we'd have to ask them because they sort of came up and then they took a huge break and they came up again. So maybe I'd have to see, but they would probably say, now the first time we came up and then the second time we turned up. So maybe the come up and the turn up for them is different. But for us, we just had one come, like the first Bowery, you know, you never have that feeling.
And the thing is, after that one, you kind of aren't scared of anything anymore.
Yeah.
You know, like, but before, there's a certain, for me anyway, that there's a certain turning point where you get on the stage in front of a big enough crowd that you're like, you know, 4,000.
2,000 and 20,000.
Yeah, it doesn't make a tremendous difference.
It doesn't, it's true.
On how you feel.
Yeah.
You want to rock it. And obviously, like, the funnest shows are the shows where you can really connect with an audience, which usually a smaller room.
It happened to us on big audiences too, but you never know. And the thing too is, like, as your show gets bigger, I think that you start thinking about troubleshooting more, you know?
Yeah.
And
oh, because you've got lights and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah. I mean, there's cues and there's stuff. I mean, I don't know. Like, you're thinking about different things, you know?
It's not I think about that kind of shit a lot, and it definitely lights a fire under your ass a little bit to have some kind of element that stays challenging in your stage show.
Well, that's going to happen with us. I was just meeting the stage designer for our next stage show. That's going to happen with us. I mean, so tomorrow, the new guy we're working for stage design, he's doing this Pet Shop Boys show now. So he's in town. And the Pet Shop Boys show, which I'm going to go see tomorrow night at the Beacon, it's run entirely off time code. The whole thing. So it's like, I just wonder, like, what do you think about? Like, it's
like a Skrillex show or something.
Is that, yeah, that's probably how it works.
Like an EDM
right?
show. Yeah. I mean, that's
the whole thing is run off of time code, right? There's, there's the computer and.
Cause the cues for the lights and the projections and all that stuff are too complicated.
Yeah. For one guy to man.
To just like do it on the fly if somebody decided to like, you know.
Whereas
go into a long story between the songs.
But you can't.
No, exactly. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. We got to keep some room for banter.
So you're going to be, shooting P out of a cannon.
Yes.
He's going to base jump into the audience.
Cherry picker entrance, mandatory.
Did you see Public Enemy when they would lower, their DJ from the ceiling with a DJ booth with the giant lit up X out of the curtains?
No, that's crazy.
Unbelievable. you need to, and Prince comes out of the stage.
The elevator, yeah. Well, we played a venue at the Congress Theater in Chicago. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah.
But there's the trap that Prince came out of and that he actually had them dig it up, remember? And so the trap is still there from the Prince show that they had God knows how long ago for Prince to come up through the stage.
Yeah,
it's nuts.
That's when you've got juices, when you're fucking with the building's infrastructure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You can excavate. Now, we're just going to excavate that. Okay, cool.
And
now,
in Chicago, where there's going to be bones underneath the floor.
Well, that whole building's haunted. And
yeah, that whole venue's haunted. Yeah.
Let's take it back real quick, and then we're going to wrap up pretty soon.
Cool.
Oh, I'm dying to see your new show because I always want to see what you guys cover.
Yeah, we haven't covered anything in a while. We had this phase where we did like Journey.
Yeah.
Here's the plan. The first year of this tour, when we start touring again, the first year we'll do like the greatest hits. And then the second year we'll do Mercury Tears, we'll do covers, we'll do weird songs.
Because we're hitting places the second or third time.
Yeah, and also it's gonna be our 10th year touring with 4 albums.
Jesus, so now Christ, it's gonna be,
yeah, 10 year. The first album came out in 2004. So at this point, on the second year of touring, we'll just be like, dude, take it or leave it. We're gonna play Woman Friend. We're gonna play Mercury Tears again. We'll play like the weird album cuts from Business Casual, you know, and the hits. But like, we're gonna have to indulge a little bit, and we're gonna have to do some covers. I mean, we have to cover ZZ Top Legs at one point.
You've gotten really into ZZ Top, huh?
Really into ZZ Top, yeah.
We used to cover Patience.
Yeah, that was crazy, yeah.
Talkbox.
Yeah, I really appreciate it.
Dude, thanks for that. It's so fun.
Thanks.
This is Small Talk Podcast with DJ Ayers on Brooklyn Radio. We'll talk to you shortly.